Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
Election day is just about a week away, and the candidates are busy making their closing arguments with voters.
Polling results are bouncing all over the place.
And big news as the Boston Globe endorses Charlie Baker over Martha Coakley.
Joining us now for a political check-in is WBUR reporter Asma Khalid. Hi, Asma.
Hi, Sasha.
So start us off with the latest on the polls. What stands out? What other big news do we need to know?
Well, I think the big story this week has been the churn in the polls. This race has really been all over the place. Last week, a lot of attention was paid to the Boston Globe poll that showed Republican Charlie Baker ahead of Democrat Martha Coakley by 9 points. That's huge, and it's certainly much larger than any of the other political polls have shown. A new YouGov New York Times poll out today shows Martha Coakley in the lead by 4 points. That was also a much larger sort of sample size. Our polls have sort of shown a race that's almost in a dead heat. So I think, as I was speaking with our pollster Steve Cazella earlier, he said, in some races, he feels confident leading up to Election Day. In this race, he says he really doesn't know where
things will
fall.
In terms of making a call about
how things
will play out.
Exactly, exactly. And so, beyond that, we've also been seeing a lot of sort of debates. We still are in the last stages. We have a debate tonight on NECN. We have one of our consortium WBUR debates tomorrow night. And then on Wednesday, Vice President Joe Biden comes to town. He'll be fundraising for Martha Coakley.
And there have been other big names in town. On Friday, Hillary Clinton was here stopping for Coakley. You were at that, Asma. How was that
event? I was. She certainly had Martha Coakley, quite a few big hitters come to town for her. The First Lady, Bill Clinton, and then Hillary Clinton. And what I think is interesting about Hillary's visit was that it focused a lot on women's issues. And I think throughout this election, we've heard so much about the women's vote and how important the women's vote is to winning, perhaps in different ways, to both Democrats and Republicans. And on Friday, which is the same day a new Boston Globe poll came out, showing that Martha Coakley's support among women was slipping and that she really only held a 4-point lead among women, which is really not enough to, considering, sort of historically how Democrats have done with women. It was interesting to see that day, Hillary Clinton came to town and she was preaching all about women's issues. We heard her speak about equal pay for equal rights. Equal pay for equal work. And also sort of, carrying on about issues like reproductive rights, which are almost non-issues here in the state of Massachusetts, but they really rallied up this core base of female voters.
And Asma, you have a story coming out tomorrow morning that focuses in on some specific policy issues. Tell us what we'll be hearing in the morning.
That's right. We'll be hearing about a wide array of policy issues. And I should say this piece in particular is actually a digital story. It'll be on Poll Vault, which is WBUR's political section online. And it sort of stemmed, the genesis of it was, we've been hearing a lot throughout this campaign about both Martha Coakley and Charlie Baker trying to appeal to the moderate middle, the sort of vast swath of unenrolled voters. And over time, following them on the campaign trail, you'd almost hear them echo one another's messages, which is really interesting. And you sort of saw them coming to the middle on various policy positions. And so what we wanted to do is offer this sort of voter guide almost, to sort of where are the key salient distinctions, policy distinctions in this race. And we whittled it down after looking through a lot of policy positions to sick time, early childhood education, climate change, higher education, and welfare reform.
So let's pick two of those. Go with sick time. What are the candidates talking about here, and how do they differ in their views?
Well, for Martha Coakley, earned sick time has really been a staple of her campaign. It's also a question that voters will see on the ballot, and they can sort of individually decide whether or not they support earned sick time. And most of our polling shows that there is widespread support for this initiative. Martha Coakley essentially supports the issue as it appears on the ballot. And that would offer most employees about 5 days of sick time. For many folks who work sort of larger organizations above 11 employees, that would be paid earned sick time. For those at smaller companies, it would be unpaid, but it would still be earned sick time that they could take. And Coakley has made a point of sort of bringing this issue up, even though it's going to be a ballot measure, and sort of showing the distinctions between her and her opponent, Charlie Baker.
My Republican opponent and his CEO friends I don't think they worry about her in sick time. I don't even think they see or understand people who don't get it. But I've seen it. I know it. You know it. And that's what Democrats stand for. And that's why we're going to win in November.
So, Sasha, you know, it's interesting. This is an issue that in some ways voters will have the opportunity to decide themselves. But she's really made it a sort of a core principle of her campaign. And then on the other side, you know, Charlie Baker, I think it's interesting that he says he supports the position, but he has not endorsed the ballot question as it stands. He has put forth an alternative vision of earned sick time that would allow employees at companies that have more than 50 employees to earn sick time.
And I worry that a lot of people who have programs in place that they believe work for them are going to lose them, or at least have them dramatically disrupted as a result of this question. But I support the policy. I just support a different approach to it.
So as you see, you know, they both will say, we support earned sick time. But I think this is an issue where we sort of see how they support it very differently. Coakley wants earned sick time for all, no questions asked, essentially. Baker says, I understand, why people will want this. But to some degree, he thinks businesses need to have the flexibility to implement this, according to what works for individual companies.
Asma, you've also been digging into higher ed issues and how candidates differ there. And one of the top issues that voters say they care about is making higher ed more affordable. They're very worried about the cost of college. Yet that hasn't come up very often on the campaign trail. So what are the Baker-Coakley stances on that?
You know, you're right. I think that's so fascinating. Time and again, when we've polled, we've seen that this is a top issue for voters. And I think what's interesting is while we haven't heard as much about it on the campaign trail, both Martha Coakley and Charlie Baker have quite detailed policy positions on how to tackle this problem in very different ways. And I would argue that in some ways I think this is perhaps the most vivid distinction between the two candidates. And you sort of see how a Charlie Baker governor would govern and how a Martha Coakley governor would govern. And for Charlie Baker, the way to tackle this problem is essentially a system-wide reform. He wants to sort of address this problem, fix it from the roots without really putting that much new money into it. So he's offering things like more online education, more three-year degrees. And he wants to work with the State Board of Higher Education to allow for more students to obtain both a bachelor's and a master's within 4 years. These are sort of system-wide reforms that wouldn't really add money.
Wouldn't burden the budget, essentially.
Exactly, exactly. And then Martha Coakley, on the other hand, is offering perhaps more traditional solutions to the problem. She is wanting to offer tax deductions for families that put money into tax college savings accounts, about a $5,000 tax deduction per year. And then she also wants to offer full need financial aid to students at community colleges. Some of those students, you know, are wanting to go to a community college, they may receive some grants or loans from the community college, but not enough to essentially cover all the costs. And Martha Coakley is saying, if you are capable, if you are, you know, able to attend one of these community colleges, this state will pick up the remaining portion of the tab. In total, this plan will cost about $250 million annually, both the tax deduction and the full need financial aid package.
And that makes higher ed an issue that is a big distinction between the two of them.
Exactly, exactly. And I think, you know, what's interesting is it's a case in point, I think, to perhaps how both Martha Coakley and Charlie Baker would govern. And I think that's interesting. They both have these ideas for how you ought to tackle the high cost of college, but in really different ways of how you would bring that problem, bring those costs down.
That's WBUR's Asma Khalid. She's been reporting on the race for governor. And tomorrow you can read her piece on key policy differences between Charlie Baker and Martha Coakley on the special poll vault section of our website, WBUR.org. Asma, thank you.
You're welcome.
And joining us now for more on the final days of the governor's race, we turn to two of our esteemed political observers. Jeff Stinson is a Republican consultant and president of Stinson Strategies. And welcome back to the show, Jeff. Good to have you.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Also with us is Shannon O'Brien. She's a former state treasurer and was a Democratic nominee for governor in 2002. Shannon, welcome back to you. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Let me start with both of you, if I could, with the Boston Globe endorsing Charlie Baker over the weekend. Rare step for a paper that usually sides with the more liberal candidate. The Globe praised both of these candidates, but endorsed Baker as the one who can make government work better. And the editors hit Coakley over what they called an odd reluctance to seize the initiative. Shannon, I'll start with you. First of all, your reaction to the Globe endorsement, and does it matter?
I think that it certainly has some impact, especially when we're going to talk a little bit about how fluid
the polls are right now, how close this race really is, and that, you know, small things can make a real difference. I think that this was actually one of the things that I had to be challenged with when I was running in 2002. The toughest argument that I think Mitt Romney made against me was the one so-called one-party rule here in Massachusetts. And I think that's, you know, probably something that in a state that is really more independent than either Democrat or Republican, it's a pretty persuasive argument. That being said, one of the most curious things I saw at the very end of the editorial endorsement was that on the two issues that the Globe seemed to hone in on, one was on education and one was on Charlie Baker's more full-throated support of charter schools, which the Globe has often endorsed and supported as a way to reform K through 12 education, which I sort of get. Martha Coakley is more in opposition to that. But on transportation, when you have Charlie Baker supporting the repeal of the first real important financing mechanism for transportation issues, which are at the bedrock of both Martha and Charlie's economic development plan, only one of those two candidates is in support of keeping those revenues in place, and that's Martha Coakley and not Charlie Baker. So I thought that was very interesting and somewhat contradictory within the editorial. But it certainly is. It's anytime, you know, you get an endorsement, it's a good thing, and it's something you can put in your television commercials, and it's a seal of approval.
And people like us start to talk about it.
Right, exactly.
Jeff, I'd love to get your reaction to it. We're going to talk about the sort of fluidity of the polls in a moment, but Shannon made the point that when things are so fluid and the race does seem to be so close, how does this help Charlie Baker?
Well, I think, you know, over the course of my career, I've seen that endorsements tend to be more indicators than influencers. However, at this stage of the game, I think Shannon's right. This becomes more of an influencer because it's so close and because there's such a trend, it seems, towards Charlie Baker. I know there are some flip-flops in the poll. If you look at some of them, I think there's some issues with credibility with some of them. But I think ultimately what this is showing is that he's striking the right chords in certain places, and it's highlighting her weaknesses. When we saw them endorse Steve Grossman in the primary, many thought, and I was included in those, we figured that the Globe would actually endorse Charlie Baker because it seems they weren't quite sold on her style.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you about these churning polls. We heard Asma talking about them. I mean, last week we had Baker up by 9 points. Today, the CBS New York Times YouGov poll shows Coakley up by 4. Shannon, I'd love to hear your perspective as a candidate sort of trying to sort through these and when you had to do that, making sense of these polls.
Polls, I think it's much harder right now than it was when I ran in 2002 to even do polling. There's much greater reliance upon cell phones, that kind of difference. And so I would have to say it's a lot harder to sort of pinpoint the accuracy of a lot of this polling. I also think that, again, the difference from my background in my history and what's going on right now, there's a much more splintered and much more immediate access to political information, not just from the sort of newspapers and radio stations and television stations. There are lots of different ways to speak to an audience. And so I think that it makes the whole race itself a much more fluid process because people do change their mind when they get different information. Mm. And getting direct access to that information, you know, this year as opposed to when I ran in 2002 is much much more rapid and much more easy to get out there.
Jeff, what do you see? The Coakley forces will say that 9% lead that the Globe poll turned up was a bit of an outlier. Today we've got this other poll showing Coakley up by 4. I mean, are you seeing evidence of Charlie Baker momentum, or at this point is it still sort of too close to call? What's your view?
Well, there's clearly evidence of momentum, but I'll go back to the polls and say the key with polls isn't so much, and I'm sure Shannon can attest to this, isn't so much the numbers as much the trends. And what you look at is to see where certain polls are going. These are two very different polls we're talking about. We're talking about the Boston Globe poll, which is, I think, a random voice dial poll without live questions. And I believe YouGov has been somewhat criticized because they tend to do purely online. But both can have some credibility, and both can have some weaknesses, as Shannon pointed out. Ultimately, I think this is momentum because the fact that Charlie Baker could even be up 9 points in a Boston Globe poll in 2014 tells us that this is clearly a close race.
Close race. And Shannon, this sort of leads to my question about sort of Martha Coakley's biggest hurdle. I mean, this race, of course, is taking place in a state that is arguably very blue, very popular Democratic governor. Martha Coakley, an advocate for a number of issues important to Democrats and to women in particular. Why is this race even close?
Because this is not... In terms of executive leadership in this state, it's really not a blue state. Mm. It's a purple state. And the fact that people in this state continue to send incredibly lopsided representation to both the House and to the Senate will tell you that, yes, it's Democratic, but it is a much harder hurdle when you're running for a Democratic executive position to say that you can bring that balance. And that's a very hard argument, I think, for Martha Coakley to make. And also, don't forget, you know, Charlie Baker had a primary fight, but not quite the same fight that Martha did. And Martha has weathered much more negative advertising from both her Democratic opponents as well as her Republican opponent. And so that certainly has cut into, a lot of the momentum, I think, that she initially had. That being said, I still believe this is a very close race. And I also believe that the get out the vote that the Democrats have perfected in this state is a factor that you don't always figure within this polling process right now.
In fact, they say that the polling process can't really detect or measure in a concrete and credible way the get out the vote effort, right? Is that right, Jeff?
Well, I was actually going to actually go back quickly. Sorry about that. I was actually going to go back looking to Shannon's point about why it's so close. I just want to make a quick comment.
Sure, please do.
With these two, you know, the Democrats have really benefited from charismatic leaders, you know, Deval Patrick speaking eloquently. Mm. I don't think Martha Coakley brings that. And Charlie Baker greatly benefits from that. You know, ultimately what you have here is Charlie Baker able to not be as charismatic, because he's not, but he's better, more so than last time. But he's able to benefit from her lack of charisma, I think, is why he's able to capitalize and throw Lauren Baker, his wife, out there and really be able to gain some momentum on her.
And Jeff, comment though on what Shannon was saying about the Democratic ability, its well-oiled machine, to turn out the vote.
So the Republicans have actually invested in a multi-million-dollar system that we've been using in all the campaigns I work on, and it's actually quite substantial. They've basically gone down to what magazine you read and subscribe to. And so I think what the Republicans are really trying to do, and they're getting better at, is really matching the Democrats' game on that front.
Yeah.
And it could be interesting to see, with such a low turnout race, if, you know, with these independents seem to be leaning towards Charlie, it could make the difference.
Yeah. What do you think, Shannon? Do you think the Republicans are catching up with the Democrats and their get out the vote ability?
I think there's a difference between the information. And I will tell you, when I ran against Mitt Romney, the micro-targeting that they did in that campaign and the resources they had, he outspent me close to 3-1. And one of the things that he was able to do is this micro-targeting where, depending on what magazine, you know, it would be a nurse who lives in Wellesley, you know, who is an independent, who has a child in school. You could direct a mail piece to that person and make a persuasive argument. But I do think that I hate the term, you know, having those, you know, those feet on the ground, you know, having those people out knocking doors. I do think that there has been a very, very good effort in terms of the physical, how you go out, how you knock on doors, how you call people, that the Democrats may have a lead in. But in terms of the information and targeting, I think the Republicans have done here and nationally, they're doing a much better job at that.
Mm. I want to ask you about this other thing we heard Asma talking about, and that is the big names that have stepped in to fundraise. Particularly,
excuse me, can I just congratulate Asma? I wish she would just have a debate with herself, and then we would truly understand, because she talked about the higher education thing, and I've been one of those people going, why? I have a 15-year-old. Why aren't they both beating this down like crazy? So I want to thank Asma for having one of the better conversations that I don't think either Charlie or Martha could have to illuminate those issues for us.
All right. Well, she'll be announcing her candidacy for governor in the next hour.
Well, she's just
got
to keep talking
Boston.
To herself. So
okay, there we go.
Good job.
All right. Well, let me get back to these big names. Hillary Clinton was in town on Friday. Joe Biden will be here on Wednesday. Elizabeth Warren, Michelle Obama also have stumped for Martha Coakley. What's the impact of these big name appearances? Do they make a difference, Shannon?
I think they do make a difference in terms of energy. And getting back to my point about the energy and getting those boots on the ground and getting those people out there making the calls, the people that you have to energize right now are as much the sort of people who don't always, you know, who show up for a presidential election but may not show up for a mid-year election. You have to get your team of people energized, and you have to get those less reliable voters energized. And it's those big names that come in and I think, generate that energy. And the good news for Martha Martha, is unlike when President Clinton came in for me in 2002, apparently he stayed awake through the entire rally, which was a really good thing for her. So that was a good point.
Jeff, your comment on these big names in terms of what they bring to an effort to energize voters.
Very simply, money. I don't think it brings much more because, as Shannon pointed out earlier, the concept and the argument that we need a two-party system is very effective, and I think it's resonating. And so when you bring these sort of national leaders to the forefront, I don't think it really benefits or hurts the candidate necessarily, except for the checkbook. And Martha Coakley, I think, does need the money. She was hurt by the primary.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really been her weakness throughout this race, is the fact that she hasn't been able to get her name out as much as she'd like to.
All right. So voters head to the polls 1 week from tomorrow. So with just a week to go, Jeff, I'll start with you. What would be your playbook for the Baker campaign? What does it look like with 1 week to go?
Keep hitting the court of independents. Keep putting Charlie out there as much as possible, and keep making Martha Coakley have to respond to his vision, his support. Asma pointed out his vision versus Martha Coakley's. I think if he's able to focus on the fact that he's reform and she's repair, I think that he could make some big headway here in the last week.
And Shannon, same question to you. If you were running the Coakley effort, how would you suggest that the campaign seal the deal in this next week?
I've watched many of the televised debates, and I think that she's got to win these next two, and I think that she has only gotten better and better. I think that she has to really remind people that when it comes to middle class, when it comes to average people, when it comes to those people who are struggling to pay for a college education or who are worried about, earned sick time, she's got to remind people that she's on their side. You know, when she and her, husband, who's a former cop, who live in Somerville, who've been middle class people, they're in the same boat that a lot of these people who are going to be voting. And Charlie Baker, has appealed more, I think, to the CEO crowd of folks. He's done a very good job raising money, a very good job reaching out to the business community. She's got to continue to remind people, I'm on your side. I'm going to fight for the issues that you care about.
All right. Well, that's Shannon O'Brien. She's a former state treasurer and Democratic gubernatorial candidate. Shannon, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And Jeff Stinson, a Republican strategist, president of Stinson Strategies. Jeff, as always, great to have you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And Shannon, Medford, I think. Does Martha Coakley
Medford,
live in Medford?
Yes,
exactly.
I'm sorry.
So shout out to her hometown.
Thank you for correcting
me. Both communities that those hear very much about those issues.
Yes, sorry.
Stay with us. Coming up, the high cost of staying warm this winter. We'll ask why electricity prices are expected to dramatically increase in New England in the coming months. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.